Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Welcome to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo, keeping you connected to your faith and your world. Teresa tackles the issues of faith and culture, the pro-life message, and media awareness. And now, here's Teresa Tomeo.
To announce the results of a two-year grand jury investigation into widespread sexual abuse of children within the Catholic Church and the systematic cover-up by senior church officials in Pennsylvania and at the Vatican.
I'm livid that priests could do this. I'm livid that bishops in the past could have reassigned men who have done it. I've been livid for quite a while.
For these people, in a look-back window, to be able to, you know, face their predator in court will be a huge step to healing. And it'll also be an accountability that fits the crime.
To think that these people who were either training for a position of trust or in positions of high trust would betray their vocation and injure the young lives that were entrusted to their care.
It's a Thursday morning. It's August 16th, 2018. Teresa Tomeo, Catholic Connection, and we are going to take a look at this stunning and shocking and such a sad report from the grand jury that came out from Pennsylvania. You heard just a second ago a montage, as we say in the news business, of various reactions. You heard Cardinal Dolan, you heard the Attorney General, and you heard other folks, including a victim, speaking out in response to the grand jury report. It's not without its criticisms because of a number of inaccuracies, but what it does do is it gives us a picture of what's happened over the past 60, 70 years and what may have led to what we saw in June with the charges against former Cardinal, or the allegations against former Cardinal Theodore McCarrick, because the patterns that were developed years ago are obviously in some ways still present. And if we are going to change the future, we have to look at our history and our background. That's why I so appreciate the work of Dr. Matthew Bunsen, EWTN contributor, noted Catholic author, historian, and expert in church teaching. We're going to get to him in a minute, but I want you to go to the homepage of the National Catholic Register, ncregister.com, which has a terrific list of really good reports, news analysis, other articles on what we do now. And we also want to talk about with Dr. Bunsen, and which we've been talking about for the last couple of weeks on Crest in the Afternoon, Catholic Connection, Catholic Answers, all of our programs on EWTN and all of our sites, is what is the best way that we as a people of God, what can the laity do? Yes, we are outraged. Yes, we are heartbroken. Many of you are emailing me. My Facebook page is still exploding and expressing such emotion and sorrow and sadness. But what can we do to promote good, healthy response to this? This is what the laity need to do. We need to roll up our sleeves, and we'll talk about that as well with Dr. Bunsen. Also joining me on the program today, since we were off yesterday for the Holy Day of Obligation for the Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary, my friend Joan Lewis, looking at reaction in Rome. Nothing yet, but that's not necessarily because they're ignoring it. It's because in August in Rome, everybody just vacates and they literally take their holiday. So there's not much coming out of Rome at all. Although given the severity of the situation, there probably will be shortly, I'm sure, some sort of a statement in response to this report, given the other problems going on with allegations of abuse in the church coming from in around the world. So we'll talk with Dr. Bunsen. We'll also talk with Joan Lewis. And then Dr. Monica Miller will be along to remind us after we chat with Bunsen, Dr. Bunsen, about this beautiful memorial that they have every September for babies lost to abortion, to speak up for those who can't speak for themselves, as it says in Proverbs 31. And brothers and sisters, this is what I want to encourage you to do, to hold fast and hold so strongly to the beautiful teachings of Holy Mother Church. We are going through an extremely painful time right now, and it's just beginning, really. I think we're just starting to really see the tip of the iceberg here. But we as a people of God, as Archbishop Fulton Sheen reminds us, we have to remember that we have such an important role, that we are co-workers in the kingdom, as it says in 1 Corinthians 3:9. And not to relinquish that, and to encourage our bishops to stand up, and instead of just always seemingly to be on the defense, to be on the offense here, in protection and the education and concern of their flock. So we'll talk about that right now with our friend, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, who really doesn't need any introduction, but he has a long and terrific history in teaching us about the faith. He is a PhD. He's a church historian, has written dozens of books, and he's with us after doing a terrific report and analysis, which I've posted on my Facebook page, Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report, A Reminder of the Toll of Failure. And again, you can see it on the homepage of the Register at ncregister.com and also on my Facebook page. So Dr. Bunsen, thanks for joining us this morning.
Good morning. Good to be with you. As always, I wish you were under better circumstances.
Well, your thoughts, a terrific analysis of the situation. I think the headline is very telling, A Reminder of the Toll of Failure. There are a lot of criticisms being tossed at the Attorney General of Pennsylvania for some inaccuracies in this report. But at the same time, when you read it, as horrifying as it is, you can see patterns that have yet to be broken in many areas.
Yeah, absolutely. And for those who, like you and myself and a lot of people who've been following the sex abuse crisis for a long time, there is a kind of sick pattern that we could see in this grand jury report in how this crisis unfolded and the failures, mistakes, and crimes that were committed. That's very consistent with the John Jay report that detailed in equally unrelenting fashion the history of the abuse crisis. So you're absolutely right that this is a pattern, but it fits that wider pattern that we've seen. And in that sense, we can say that so much of this is historical. And that's the one little grain of good news that we have in this, that the number of cases is now significantly lower, as we see every year with the audit. Now we're continuing to deal with the fallout, but now we're also dealing with the new reality of the problems of the bishops.
What about the beginning? How did this report come about in the first place? Why a grand jury report in Pennsylvania?
Well, the desire was to get a wide understanding of what actually happened. We'd had reports for Altoona Johnstown. We had the reports for Philadelphia.
Philadelphia, right. Mm-hmm.
Which was itself made for absolutely horrifying reading, as did the one in Altoona Johnstown. So we needed to have, as we have seen in other places like Australia and Ireland, a comprehensive vision of what happened. And yes, there are inaccuracies in this report, and in some cases some glaring ones, but the overall narrative is very clear. And I think while we can criticize Attorney General Shapiro for, in some cases, grandstanding and the use of language, I think, was intemperate, we still needed to have this kind of report put in front of us to have a clear understanding of the dimensions of the crisis so that we can move forward and deal with it effectively.
You indicate in your story, in your news analysis, that if this isn't addressed in other states, that a similar grand jury type of investigation could take place.
Oh, I would think so. Part of the frustration that you can see in the grand jury report is the limitations that they have because of the statute of limitations. There are limits that are in place that really prohibit you from pursuing criminal investigations and even civil suits. So my double fear is that individual state legislatures are now going to be tearing away the statutes of limitations. We have seen efforts in the past to single out the church almost exclusively, that only we would be subject to a lifted statute of limitations. I worry that we could see a push like that in Pennsylvania, that we could see a push like that in other states. Having said that, the grand jury report here could also serve as the model for what other states might attempt. I don't think we'll ever see one on a federal scale, such as we've seen in Ireland and Australia, but it would not surprise me at all, as I write, that we start seeing this in various other states.
We're chatting with Dr. Matthew Bunsen from EWTN, a major contributor here at the network, and you see and hear him regularly on EWTN, and it's great work for a number of different publications, in turn, especially his many, many books, and he's a great teacher of the faith and also a church historian, talking about his news analysis that you can find on the homepage of the Register, ncregister.com, Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report, A Reminder of the Toll of Failure. There have been some remarks made by some criticizing this report that the Attorney General should also, not saying that he shouldn't have looked at this, but should be also going after the problems in the public schools in Pennsylvania, which apparently have a very high rate of abuse, among the highest in the country, and that this was just a witch hunt. What is your reaction to that?
Well, I think it would be a very good thing for attorneys general all over the country to be investigating other institutions that have equally calamitous environments. Certainly, epidemic problems of abuse are there in public school systems. I'm not maligning the public school system, but the reality is that there are a lot of problems. Having said that, we need to be careful as Catholics, but also as people seeking authentic justice, to try to minimize what has happened, especially when you read this report. So we do nothing in terms of trying to deflect our need to deal with this crisis by simply trying to point someone in another direction. That will serve us no good in the long term. And in a way, that is what happened for too long in various corners of the church.
In some ways, it sounds like, and I'm not saying that this is the case, but it can seem like people are trying to, as you said, deflect attention away from the problem by pointing to problems elsewhere.
Right. No, we have a problem that's in front of us. We look at the progress we've made since 2002, with the Dallas Charter, with the essential norms, with the fine-tuning of the process. You look again at the audits every year that we have in the diocese and archdiocese across the United States. We have cases that are down to the single digits. Most of those, again, like almost all of the cases in the grand jury report, are historical. It does nothing to soften the horror of this.
There were some cases that were more recent, though. In the 21st century, in I think about 2008, 2010, then also in the 1990s.
Exactly. And the ones in the 2000s are being dealt with legally, which is a very good thing, and they need to be. But what I'm getting at is that here we have the progress, since 2002 especially, and a number of bishops in Pennsylvania remarked upon that, Bishop Zubik especially, made note of the fact that this is a very different world from the one that existed when so many of these terrible events were taking place that are detailed in the grand jury report. So we can point to that. Now we need to solve the other problems of oversight, of accountability, and to demand as people of, as part of the people of God, that the bishops now step forward as well and provide the kind of transparent accountability that is being promised by a number of the bishops, including Cardinal Wuerl.
Also, though, in terms of the accountability for the issue that was not addressed in 2002, the problems of homosexuality in the priesthood and in the church.
Absolutely. And even Pope Francis has talked about this, that those with a deep-seated inclination, as he puts it, that we need to have more effective screening, that we need to have a very clear understanding of the process of formation. We need to follow the program for priestly formation as it's laid out, the PPF, for the formation of priests. And that means creating an environment in seminaries that does not permit what we know took place. And I, in my piece for the Register, I try to help provide some context. Mm-hmm. We have this grand jury report, but part of the impact of it was magnified by the simple reality that for the last month and a half, we've also been dealing with the catastrophe, the scandal of now former Archbishop Theodore McCarrick. Because it ties directly into
exactly.
So many of the failings that we've seen with the bishops.
Well, the failings, but also the patterns that are there in terms of this network that allowed things to be pushed aside, moved around. This is directly connected, and in many ways, I think that this is a grace that God has given us so that the whole thing could be blown wide open. Because I don't know about you, but I have this feeling that a lot of our leaders do not yet understand how upset people are. And many have indicated that they think this is going to blow over because a lot of people don't know, even know, because of his age, who Theodore McCarrick is. That's not what I'm getting. I mean, I'm hearing
right.
from people that I've never heard from before, and it's constant. It's every day. It's emails. It's Facebook. It's phone calls. It's people stopping me on the street. What are you hearing, and do you think that they are getting the magnitude of this?
Yeah, I'm hearing the exact same thing. And the grand jury report, in looking at these 300 and some priests who abused, and the report says about 1,000, there's probably many more, really what it comes out in bold letters throughout this grand jury report are the failures of the bishops who are in charge. And that then connects directly to the as yet unanswered and very troubling questions surrounding the McCarrick scandal. And that goes back to the starting question, who knew and what did they do about it? how did someone like this actually end up, not just the Archbishop of Newark, but the Archbishop of Washington, D.C., and a cardinal? And those are very troubling questions for Catholics. And I think we're seeing the emergence of very strong young bishops in this. When you read some of the statements of Bishop Scharfenberger from Albany, I think especially of Bishop Sean McKnight.
And the bishop from Scranton also, his statement was very, very strong.
Exactly. Yeah. And Bishop Persico. So they recognize the peril that we're facing. They recognize, too, that we are very, very close at this point to becoming something, no slur intended, but to the Irish situation, where the credibility of the bishops is almost gone.
Yeah.
And certainly the ability of the church to influence culture right at a time when we need it the most.
How ironic, or maybe not ironic, you and I have discussed this with all the things going on in the world. This is all coming out in the summer of the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. I don't think this is any coincidence.
No, because at the heart of so much of this is the abuse of power, but it's also the sexual abuse of power, which was one of the things that Pope Paul VI predicted so powerfully in Humanae Vitae. And this idea of a contraceptive culture isn't just about the pill.
Right.
It's about so much more than that. It's about the objectification of the human being. It's about the use of the human being. And what we have seen throughout this is the total collapse of a moral sense. And all of us are sinners. But we are seeing on an almost industrial scale here the failure to understand and to live what it means to try to be Christ-like and to live a life of moral sense. And that means fidelity. You know, I always go back to something that the late Richard John Neuhaus said, that the key to solving the abuse crisis is three things: fidelity, fidelity, fidelity.
Mm-hmm.
That the more we face of infidelity, and there was an immense amount of it with the clergy in Pennsylvania and elsewhere, the more we need to be faithful ourselves and then to encourage the priests who are faithful. Just remember that this is only 4%, if that much, of the total number of priests who were in service in Pennsylvania were guilty of this. So we cannot demonize and demoralize the 96-some% of the good and faithful priests that we know who right now are in a very difficult place.
All right. We need to encourage those who are strong and to encourage those to teach and preach as they were ordained to do. Matthew, stay with me for about two more minutes. I'm going to take a break now, but I know we're supposed to have Monica up, but I'm sure she'll understand. I do want to take some calls, and I also have a couple of other questions. I think the most important thing here, in addition to understanding the big picture, as you've done so beautifully in this news analysis on the Register, is how can we as a laity make a difference? I mean, Archbishop Fulton Sheen, that famous quote of his saying that the laity have to be the ones to turn things around and that we shouldn't look to the bishops. And here he is, a bishop, saying this, a famous quote of his. See if I can pull it up. But what can we do? Because I'm getting a feeling of helplessness out there, if people just don't feel that anyone will listen to them. But we have an opportunity here to really, really make a difference as co-workers in the kingdom. We're chatting with Dr. Matthew Bunsen. If you have a question, 877-573-7825. And please check out his news analysis posted yesterday on the Register website, ncregister.com, right there on the homepage. Pennsylvania Grand Jury Report, a reminder of the toll of failure. What can you and I do to make a difference? We'll address that question up next. Stay tuned.
Catholic Connection is underwritten in part by Charity Mobile. Communication is critical. And in today's world, your cellular service is your lifeline to family and friends. Ave Maria Radio and Charity Mobile are partners in communicating the most important message of all, the good news of Jesus Christ. Charity Mobile is a provider of cellular LTE phones and service and has been a proud supporter of Ave Maria Radio and other pro-life causes for more than 10 years. More information at CharityMobile.com. Charity Mobile. Charity begins at phone.
Cresta in the Afternoon is underwritten by the following nonprofit organization, Real Estate for Life. Buying or selling your home or business property? Real Estate for Life can connect you to one of 900 pro-life real estate agents around the world. When Real Estate for Life receives a referral fee, they donate 80% to Father Bouquet's Human Life International. More information at realestateforlife.org or 877-LIFE-US1. That's realestateforlife.org.
Hello, this is Steve Ray. I'd like to invite you to go on a pilgrimage with me. Why a pilgrimage? It's life-changing. It makes the Bible come alive. We have several coming up in the fall and winter of this year. St. Paul Cruise, 9 biblical sites, Mexico and Guadalupe. It's very safe and beautiful, by the way, and many to the Holy Land.
Pick the pilgrimage that's right for you. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the pilgrimage link. There's 2 coming up and a lot more to come. AveMariaRadio.net.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Welcome back, Catholic Connection. We had a day off yesterday, so we definitely wanted to give you a chance to respond and have some really solid teaching and explanation of the meaning of this fallout from the grand jury report from the Attorney General's office in Pennsylvania. We're chatting with Matthew Bunsen, Dr. Matthew Bunsen, regular contributor, senior contributor to EWTN, and he is seen regularly on EWTN News Nightly, heard on, of course, Morning Glory, and on this show, and on Crest in the Afternoon, and also a prolific writer, written many books, and is a great teacher of the Catholic faith. 877-573-7825. The Pennsylvania grand jury report, a reminder of the toll of failure, can be found at the homepage of the National Catholic Register at ncregister.com. I think probably a lot of people, and you've probably heard this too, are feeling helpless that nobody is listening. What can we do? Because it's one thing to be outraged, which is extremely, I mean, that's important. You have to have that outrage. As Father John Ricardo said this week, if you're not angry and outraged by this, then something's wrong. But you need to do something with it. So what can we do as a people that constructively is going to make a difference, do you think, Matthew?
Well, I think there are several things. I always go back to one of my all-time favorite quotes from a saint, St. Augustine, who made the observation that you tell me the times are evil, will become holier and the times will get better.
Mm.
And he added that you are the times. So it starts with us. And I'm not saying that we're all to blame for this, but what I am saying is that as Catholics, as Christians, this is a moment where we have to decide, do we believe? And the answer is, where else are we going to go?
Only you, Lord, have the words of eternal life.
To whom shall we go?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And so we start with ourselves. We recognize that we need to make reparations. And I know that sounds counterintuitive, and I know that a lot of people will be angry to hear that. But we start with making reparations for the sins that were committed by those who are part, like we, in the church. We are part of the church. We belong to the church. We love the church. And so we have to be horrified for anything that was done in our church, certainly by those who are acting and supposed to act in persona Christi. So be horrified, demand authentic justice, but also pray, avail yourself of this fast, mm-hmm. avail yourself of the sacraments, because we can encourage our bishops to do the same. I think we are moving toward a real mounting pressure on the bishops to look at this collectively, but also individually. I think we need to continue to encourage, not to insult or try to humiliate our bishops, but to give them the encouragement right now to take the steps that we need to fix this problem. And we have the right to ask of them to deal with this crisis, but we do so respectfully, because we have to remember that they are the successors to the apostles.
Mm-hmm.
And at the end of the day, we cannot reconfigure ourselves theologically, ecclesiologically, spiritually, and try to turn them into nothing more than CEOs. We need to encourage our young priests to encourage their bishops.
And we are living in a time, as you said, that there are really good bishops. George Weigel mentioned this in a piece he did. I'm trying to remember if it was on First Things. I've been reading so much about this, I'm losing track of where I'm reading. But George Weigel had an excellent piece, and he talked about the fact that if we're going to get change, the bishops have to buy in, because this is the structure of the church.
That's right.
He said, in addition to the laity doing this independent investigation, that we have to have, you know, some of the clerics involved. He said, but there are really good, strong bishops who can take the bull by the horns and really be serious about this.
Yes, exactly. In much the same way that you and I have even talked now, you have a lot of guests who talk about the fact that we have so many good, solid young priests who are faithful, who love what they're doing, who are, as Cardinal Timothy Dolan always likes to say, who savor their priesthood. They are in exactly the same way as we've seen in church history. You know, we saw that in the middle of the 11th century. Pope Leo IX arrives in Rome as a new pope, dressed as a pilgrim barefoot, and he began a process of reform. And when you read someone like Peter Damian, who is writing around this exact same era as Leo IX, he was lamenting the exact same crimes and sins that we're dealing with now. So these are patterns that we see, and we have to be holier, and let's find those reformers like Peter Damian.
And write to our bishops respectfully and ask for a response, as Monsignor Pope said in his piece the other day. Even if they can't write a detailed response, to acknowledge receipt, to let you know that they heard you. Matthew, thanks so much. Keep up the great work. I'm sure we'll be talking again very soon. Dr. Matthew Bunsen's piece can be found on the homepage of ncregister.com. We'll be right back.
Why are there so few practicing Catholics in public office? And by practicing, I mean Orthodox, faithful to all the Church's teachings. There are many thousands of good Catholic candidates for school boards, mayor seats, state senate, Congress, governorships, even the presidency. They're out there. Some of them may be listening right now. We need to spend less time complaining about faux Catholics out there and more of our time encouraging the real ones to get in the game. In the Catechism of the Catholic Church, number 1915, we read, "As far as possible, citizens should take an active part in public life." Don't get me wrong, public life is not easy. The times are tough. But were they as tough as the first, say, 300 years of the Church? Haven't we as Catholics faced down more fearsome enemies than the ones we face today? I think so, too. I'm Patrick Coffin of PatrickCoffin.media. Be a saint. What else is there?
What's stopping you from becoming a Catholic?
Why can't women become priests?
I don't understand why I have to earn salvation.
How is it possible that God created everything?
Why do I need to confess my sins to a priest?
Why is the Catholic Church so unwilling to
The Catholic Church is too rich.
Catholics worship Mary and are
committed. As far as I'm concerned, all religions are equal.
You are called to communion with Dr. David Anders. Today, 2 p.m. Eastern, on the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.
Countless Catholics settling for a life of faith that begins and ends with the obligatory Sunday Mass. While essential, giving just 1 hour of our lives to God can never satisfy our deep longing for a purposeful, joy-filled life. Hi, I'm Teresa Tomeo, host of Catholic Connection, and in my new book, Beyond Sunday, Becoming a 24/7 Catholic, I get real about what it takes for us to live as a Catholic every day of the week. You can purchase Beyond Sunday and the study guide at AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Every single day, we roll up our sleeves and keep doing what we're doing, preaching the truth in love and making a difference, because you know what? The church teachings are true. Is it true? As Matthew was saying earlier, where do we go, Lord? Only you have the words of eternal life. And speaking of life, as someone who does such an amazing job and has for decades of supporting and speaking up for those who can't speak for themselves, my dear friend, sister in the Lord, and fellow Michigander, Dr. Monica Miller from Citizens for a Pro-Life Society. So I can't believe it's almost September, and we're looking at the memorial for the aborted babies. And it's now going on, Monica, across the country, correct?
Absolutely. This is the National Day of Remembrance for Aborted Babies. And this will be our fifth year doing the memorial services at the actual grave. Sad to say, actual grave sites where aborted babies are buried, literally all over the United States. And then there'll be quite a few memorial services that actually take place at the markers, the memorial markers. There are hundreds of those, again, all over the United States. But we feel very important, that it's very important, Teresa, that we honor the victims of abortion, the victims of our national legalized slaughter, where today, right today, 3,500 more innocent human beings are going to be executed with the sanction of law, the protection of law. Their lives are deemed as non-persons, as Roe versus Wade has relegated them to basically, their, according to the law, according to our culture, they're non-entities. They may as well not even exist. But we're not going to treat the unborn that way. The victims of abortion are our brothers and our sisters, and we have to step in as kind of the proxy, shall we say, Teresa, adoptive parents, and embrace them and witness to the world that their lives are real, that they their lives are sacred, that they, these tiny, tiny human beings, are members of the human family. And that's what we do when we gather at their actual grave sites. I mean, these are not symbolic, you know, stones that have been erected. These are real plots at cemeteries, in some cases where thousands of aborted babies are buried. And I really hope people will come out. This is a great way, number one, to witness to the sanctity of human life. And, of course, doing honor to these victims. I really believe no one said it better than the concentration camp survivor, Elie Wiesel, where he said, to forget murder victims is to kill them twice. And so this is not something that we want to do. We don't want to forget them. You know, it's kind of, when I say forget, I mean, first of all, the tragedy and the injustice of abortion, Teresa, has rendered the unborn, the aborted unborn, forever strangers to us. I mean, we don't know them. We never got the chance to know them. They never got the chance to be known. The great, in some way, the greatest injustice is done to them as a consequence of that. I mean, you know, we spent so much time in the remarkable experience that I've had in retrieving the broken bodies of the abortion victims from their trash receptacles. And so I've spent time with them, and we photographed them, so we made that record to capture their humanity, to show the world that they're human, and that abortion annihilated them. So we can't escape that truth, the truth of what we've done to over 60 million innocent human beings. But still and all, we don't know them. I mean, we try to name some of them, like the baby Malachi and baby David and so on, and baby Choice, to give them an identity. But to stand at their graves is to provide them with that gesture of recognition. And so that's what we plan to do. It's September 8th. There are over 100 of these memorial services that are going to be taking place that day. Since we're from Michigan, there's actually four graves or cemeteries where there are graves of aborted babies. Lansing, Detroit, Troy, Michigan, and Southfield, Michigan. So people can go to the website and find out where on September 8th will there be a memorial service. And I hope people will come out. It's an hour, hour and a half commitment at the most. So just go to Abortion Memorials, and that's plural, abortionmemorials.com, and you click on the locations tab, and it's really, really well organized. Just scroll down to your state. It's all in alphabetical order. And you'll see if there's a red star next to the gravesite or the memorial marker, that indicates that a service is going to take place there, and all the details are there, the address, the time. If there are any special guests, those special guests will be noted. And you can even email the leader if you have a question. So there's an email link embedded at the site that's up on the website.
And these are growing in terms of attendance, correct, Monica?
Well, the attendance has been very steady for the last 5 years. And some places there has been a definite growth, but there's never been a decline. I can at least say that much. And we like to, we like to do things a little bit differently every year, have different speakers, music, and whatever else goes into a memorial service. And by the way, I should mention, and this is the first time on your program, Teresa, that I'm making this public announcement.
Okay.
Citizens for a Pro-Life Society has obtained the remains of 15 aborted babies. These are babies that were murdered by the abortionist Michael Ross in Michigan. Thanks to Lynn Mills, Michael Ross has had his license revoked, but these were the babies that were found in the trunk of his car. And his car was impounded because he got into an automobile accident. He actually hit a pedestrian. Thankfully, there was not a fatality there, but he had hit a pedestrian in West Bloomfield, Michigan. The car was impounded. When the car was down at the police headquarters, they opened up the trunk, and there are 15 aborted babies in the trunk with abortion equipment and medications. It was all very illegal. He lost his license. We have worked, Citizens for a Pro-Life Society has worked for over a year to obtain those bodies. We will be burying them. And I just mentioned this so people can really understand what's involved. Where do we ever get these bodies? And in a mere fraction of the 60 million that have been aborted, have made their way into a human cemetery.
Yeah, wrap your mind around that one. 61 million since 1973.
We'll be burying them hopefully before the end of October. But
okay, give us the website because we're out of time. We're going to get cut off.
AbortionMemorials.com.
Okay, and we'll have you back on too, Dr. Monica Miller, AbortionMemorials.com for more information. Joan Lewis, live from Rome, up next on a Thursday morning edition of Catholic Connection. You're listening to EWTN. Stay tuned.
Father Benedict Groeschel.
I often go back to my childhood. In church, we love to be reverent, to Christ present in the Eucharist, to Christ on the cross. But I was also impressed by the reverence of my friends in the Salvation Army. They had a little band, and I used to walk past the band on Sunday morning on my way to church, and I was just a child, but I said, they're trying to pray to God. They're showing reverence to God. All this was reverence. Now what do I see? I hear one irreverence after another, and week after week, month after month, the media churns out things that make fun of religion in general and make fun of Christianity in particular, and particularly make fun of the Catholic Church. No class. Absolutely no class.
EWTN. Live truth. Live Catholic.
Christ is the answer with Father John Ricardo.
Are you passionate about Jesus? Are you zealous for Jesus? Are you fervent for Jesus? Are we fervent for the gospel? Are we passionate about helping this world come to know him? Is that true? It's not true for most people in the church. Is Jesus my best friend? Is he your best friend? I'm looking around the church. There's a set of guys in here who have great man caves. As I was praying this morning, I felt like the Lord said, hey, when are you going to come to my man cave? Like, you guys think a flat screen TV is really cool. Well, you should see what I got to offer. Because I and I alone, he says, can really give you what it is you're longing for. Whoever it is we're rooting for right now, they're going to lose eventually. Or whatever it is that's occupying our time, one day we're going to realize it really wasn't that important. Why aren't we hanging out with the one who alone can show us what life is really all about? When's the last time you hung out in the Lord's man cave?
Welcome back. You're listening to Catholic Connection on a Thursday, August 16th, the day after the Feast of the Assumption of the Blessed Virgin Mary. Holy Day of Obligation. Obviously, we had the day off. We are back on the air live this morning and taking a look at the very devastating and overwhelming grand jury report that came out from Pennsylvania Tuesday afternoon from the Attorney General's office there. And many victims were present, and there's been a great response to this. And we're trying to help you kind of like dissect this and what do we do? How do we respond? And then we also look to Rome, and that's where we find our dear sister, Joan Lewis. Joan, good morning. Thanks for joining us. I know that you've been following this and the breaking news out of Philadelphia or out of Pennsylvania the other day.
Pennsylvania.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, as I said in an email to you today, I said, how do we talk through tears? I mean, you're in mourning. It's like, you know, someone has died and somebody asks you how you feel about it. We've seen that on TV news stories. And, of course, it's devastating. Just reading the news reports, much less the actual report itself, is devastating. And I know, obviously, the first thing people want to know is what is the news from Rome, and the news from Rome right now is nothing. This came out on Tuesday in the U.S. I saw it here Tuesday night, and I had just gotten back. No, I guess I got back Monday from the States. Anyway, of course, the first thing I did was to go to the website of the Vatican, and actually all that they've done, I really needn't tell you this because I'm sure you've seen it, all they did was repost the bishops, the statement from the USCCB. And, I mean, they had a headline. But in other words, we don't have anything from the Holy Father. We don't have telegrams of condolences. We don't have any kind of emotion. Now, that's not to say that nothing has happened behind closed doors, because we could have had from the highest levels of the Vatican, there could have been phone calls, there could have been emails, there could have been many, many things that would not be made public and that would of necessity take place behind the scenes. Now, that's number one. Number two is, as I said in an earlier email to you today, it may sound like an excuse, but Rome is empty. The whole month of August is the basic vacation time of the year for all Italians. July, some of them, you know, there's a brief exodus. But the big month is August, and the big day, almost the biggest holiday of the year, maybe even beating Christmas in some ways, is Ferragosto, August 15th. That was yesterday. That's the feast of, that's the Italian name for August holidays. That's what the word means. But it's also the synonym for the Feast of the Assumption. Now, in the Vatican alone, August 14, 15, and 16 are holidays. So Vatican staff is not in, your doormen on Vatican-owned buildings are not in, et cetera, et cetera. Now, I only know right now of two priests who are in Rome. I have not called up everybody that I know, period, but I, to ask what they thought of the report. But there's the only one I haven't spoken to now for today's show is obviously our EWTN priest in Rome, Father Figueredo. But I know how Father Anthony Figueredo felt with just the McCarrick
right.
report,
yeah. mm-hmm.
much less a report that now says 301 bishops in one state alone have abuse to account for. But the Roman Curia, my dear, is, I don't have the precise statistics, but based on my 15 years of working there, it's like half empty in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
You have the Vatican supermarket, the Vatican medical facilities, Vatican pharmacy, they all have reduced hours. They have 3, 4, 5 hours less a day because their personnel is on vacation. So the people who, obviously the Pope is here, Secretary of State, I'm not sure if he's in town or what, heads of various Vatican offices and congregations are out of town too, but that doesn't mean they're not communicating. It just means that we don't know anything publicly about that. So all we've seen is even the title is not that clever. The USCCB statement that was reposted on Vatican News, the title says, Official Reactions to Pennsylvania Report on Clerical Sex Abuse. Now, there is an article that appeared today, and on the Vatican News site, it says, Repentance, Sadness, and Shame, the U.S. Bishops Respond to the Pennsylvania Abuse Report. And what it was basically a short summary of the findings of the report, but more than that, the reaction from the bishops. So, Will the Holy Father react publicly in time? I think some people expected him to say something yesterday at the Angelus. Of course, yesterday was Wednesday, but because it was the Feast of the Assumption, there was no general audience.
Right.
He did speak at the Angelus.
Angelus.
And,
mm-hmm.
Which, as a matter of fact, I paid very little attention to that compared to trying to post something about this horrible story from Pennsylvania. But I wouldn't have expected him to say something at the Angelus unless he said right away about praying, you know, there's this terrible report that has come out. My heartfelt prayers and those of every member of the Roman Curia go out for the victims. That's where you're supposed to start. And in fact, in the USCCB statement, which obviously I read, my feeling, pardon my criticism, but the opening statement of their report should have been the last sentence of their first paragraph. That paragraph ended, but should have begun, as a body of bishops, we are shamed by and sorry for the sins and omissions by Catholic priests and Catholic bishops. Then it should have gone on, the report of the Pennsylvania grand jury, et cetera, et cetera. So, it's hard to say. I can't imagine, Teresa, you and I know a lot of priests here. I probably know more than you do with my, 35 years actually more, either working for the Vatican or covering it. They have to be devastated.
Mm-hmm.
Those who know the truth of their actions, who today could appear before God and say, I've been a good shepherd, those are the ones that we know. They have to be as devastated as we are to know that members of the same family of the Catholic Church, such as themselves, ordained ministers, they have to be totally shaken up. They have to be angry.
And those are the ones who have to lead the way with the laity to promote and demand change.
Exactly. Yeah. And you and I and anybody out there who cares for the Church as we do and loves it and has it as the focus of our lives, we have to pray. We have to ask Mary to keep all of these men who are living the good shepherd life, living out their vows as priests, to keep them under her mantle of love and be with them. And how do they react when they, this is what I've been thinking of too, how do they react when a priest who is a good shepherd, how do they react when they find out that somebody close to them or that they knew in the seminary and now discover years later is an abuser? I can't even imagine it.
I'm thinking. I mean, you mentioned the your comments on the statement from the USCCB. I think what would be really helpful, and I've suggested this to some leaders in the Church already on a personal basis, some sort of an effort nationally. And Dr. Bunsen and I were talking about this during the break, that in every diocese on the same day, we have a massive reparation for the sins that have been committed.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then also at the upcoming meetings in the fall to give victims a chance to speak, because I know here in Michigan it was so powerful. Of course, it made national and international news when the victims of the sex abuse scandal with former Dr. Nasser at Michigan State University, when that young woman, and she had the same experience, she was speaking out and nobody was listening to her. And this is in the secular world, right? At a very prominent athletic department at a very prominent university here in Michigan. And then finally more and more came forward, and so many testified at his sentencing. And what that did in terms of a catharsis for them, and also a chance for Nasser to hopefully, when he goes to prison for life, now really think about this and repent before he passes away. So I think that would speak volumes, maybe a national mass on the same day in all the dioceses of the country. And maybe, and I'm just throwing this out there as a Catholic. I was someone who's very concerned about it, not necessarily as a talk show host, but to do something at the bishop's conference and allow several victims to speak.
Absolutely. And we know that the Holy Father has met victims, and this has to be anguishing.
Yes, but publicly in terms of allowing them to make statements just like those who were victimized by Nassar were, so people can see it and that they can hear it and that we could, you know, that we could all join in this and support them.
And publicly, so that the media doesn't pick up the media that absolutely is salivating over the story. We have to have these people say in print, on the radio, on TV, what they want to say. The victims, I don't mean to say these people, for heaven's sakes. The victims, their words cannot be unraveled or spun by anybody who wants to take part of a sentence they want to say. And I think it was like the Pope years ago on that plane flight where he was quoted as saying, "Who am I to judge?" with the rest of the context never being given by the press. But I can't imagine what the Holy Father is thinking and how many rosaries he's saying a day about this, simply because if we remember his chastisement of the victims in Chile, whom he outright did not believe. And he said, you know, what they've said is slander. Well, then, of course, he got all of the proof for every single one of them, meeting with them eventually in Rome. He got the proof and had to apologize for what he said about the victims. Yes, indeed, they were victimized. And he said, by the way, I was part of the problem, in the sense of the reaction of the people in Chile and around the world to the Pope's initial, well, you know, you guys are being slanderous, to realizing that, by the way, you guys were victims. So he has to be terribly, I don't even like the word upset anymore. Hopefully the Pope is as devastated as...
Well, there's other things that have to be looked at, though, because of the problems that are being revealed in Chile and Honduras and in Australia and elsewhere.
Oh,
so,
yes, Honduras.
Yeah,
I mean, for heaven's sake.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's just ridiculous with the seminarians asking for, you know, someone to look at this, and they say it's gossip, and they blame Edward Penton from the National Catholic Register. Are you kidding me? Anyway, we are out of time, my dear. We got to run. Just a couple of quick things before we wrap up. I have about 2 minutes left, and just want to let you know how much time we have left. So right now it's very quiet in Rome. When will things start to get back to, let's say, normal, and when do you think we could hear something based on the fact that Rome is, and the entire country is pretty much vacated because people do go on their holiday in August?
Yeah, people start returning to Rome the end of the month. By the middle of September, things are really back to speed in the Roman Curia, where you're going to have just about 100% of your employees. Stores and everything in my whole neighborhood are closed for several weeks, and your cleaners and everybody else. But to the Roman Curia, it'll be a couple of weeks. However, that doesn't preclude anything happening before that. We have modern media, we have TV, we have emails. So just have to keep our eyes open. We have to look perhaps to a traditional venue for a papal statement, which would be a Wednesday audience, which would be a Sunday Angelus. And I don't know what other groups. Of course, he's going next week to Ireland. Will he say something there when he goes to the World Meeting of Families? And, of course, by the way, Cardinal O'Malley made the right choice. He's going to be staying home in Boston because of problems that have...
At St. John's Seminary. Yeah. EWTNnews.com has that story. Yeah, we're out of time. Okay, we look forward to checking in on you next week, Joan, to see the latest. Joan Lewis, of course, you can see her on her beautiful updates from Rome on the at-home program with our friends Jim and Joy Pinto, and also follow her through her Vatican program and also, of course, on her blog, Joan's Rome. We'll be right back to wrap up a Thursday, let you know what's coming up on a special edition tomorrow. We have a very unique live broadcast. We'll tell you about it coming up next. Stay tuned.
Abortion.
Pornography.
Embryonic stem cell research.
Corporate contributions to Planned Parenthood. Do you invest in companies that are engaged in these practices? The Ave Maria Mutual Funds do not, and their investment portfolios reflect that. Ave Maria Mutual Funds are managed to conform to pro-life and pro-family values. Long-term investors can invest in the no-load Ave Maria Mutual Funds. You can learn more about the Ave Maria Mutual Funds today at 866-AVE-MARIA or visit AveMariaFunds.com.
People ask how they can care for older family members who can't fully care for themselves. One answer is Visiting Angels, America's choice in senior home care. Visiting Angels assists adults nationwide with 600 locations to continue living at home and not have to move into a nursing home. Their caregivers provide assistance in hygiene, meals, and light housework. Services are provided up to 24 hours per day, and you can select your caregiver before service begins. More information, including franchise opportunities, is on the web at visitingangels.com.
Hello, this is Steve Ray. I'd like to invite you to go on a pilgrimage with me. Why a pilgrimage? It's life-changing. It makes the Bible come alive. We have several coming up in the fall and winter of this year. St. Paul Cruise, 9 biblical sites, Mexico and Guadalupe. It's very safe and beautiful, by the way, and many to the Holy Land.
Pick the pilgrimage that's right for you. Go to AveMariaRadio.net and click on the pilgrimage link. There's 2 coming up and a lot more to come. AveMariaRadio.net. This Ave Maria program is brought to you in part by the nonprofit CMF Curo.
Do you want an affordable healthcare option that enables you to protect your family and live your Catholic faith? CMF Curo is the Catholic healthcare ministry that works to bring health to the whole person, spirit, mind, and body. CMF Curo allows you to share health costs with other Christians and is more affordable than health insurance. Go to mycatholichealthcare.com. That's mycatholichealthcare.com. CMF Curo, healthcare fully alive.
Welcome back. It's a Thursday. Tomorrow on a Friday, August 17th, we are live from the Shrine of the Basilica of the Little Flower in Royal Oak, Michigan, which is suburban Detroit. We have something called the Woodward Dream Cruise that takes place, a huge event, national event, actually international event. And it draws people from all over the world to cruise Woodward with classic cars. And it's a great opportunity for evangelization. We'll be out there again. And we'll be talking more about the crisis in the church and also ways to evangelize in the midst of all these troubles. Have a good day. We'll talk to you on a Friday. Ciao, ciao.
You've been listening to Catholic Connection with Teresa Tomeo. Catholic Connection is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network. Our producer is Andrew Kruczek. For copies of this program or for more information, visit AveMariaRadio.net. That's AveMariaRadio.net. Thanks for listening and join us next time for another edition of Catholic Connection.